the fifth kind.
I've been a preacher for more than 30 years. I've studied and taught through the book of Genesis many, many times in churches all around the world. And I've trained pastors in the skills of interpreting texts. And it's very clear they're not stories about gods. They're stories about the powerful ones in the Bible and the sky people, the Anunnaki in the Sumerian tablets. The symbology is all there that suggests that these advanced beings, these sky people in the distant past, arrived in what you and I would call an invasion. There is a light and a shade in many of the world's ancient stories of contact. The Hebrew Bible recalls the arrival of what it calls the Tseva Hashamayim, the sky armies. Before we get into today's content, on behalf of the Fifth Kind TV, I want to say a big thank you to Surfshark for sponsoring today's content. Surfshark is a VPN that allows us all to become citizens of the world through online access. If you're like me, you'll enjoy watching online content from countries all around the world. But I live in Australia, and what I'm shown in internet searches will be different to what you're shown in Canada, America, the Philippines, Germany, the Netherlands, or wherever you're watching from. By using Surfshark, I'm able to access a world of online content and see all the things that you see and many other things beside. Surfshark enables us to become citizens of the world through online availability.
Get fully protected. Follow the link in the description. Sign up and use the promo code FIFTHKIND to receive an 85% discount. Plus, you'll get 3 months for free. Surfshark offers a 30-day money-back guarantee, so if you try it and you don't like it, you can easily cancel your subscription and receive a full refund. With Surfshark, you can swim under the radar in the sea of online content. For thousands of years, in ancient art, oral tradition, and ancient texts, human beings have told stories of visitors from the stars. The progenitors in the Guatemala Maya story of the Popol Vuh, the Anuna of the Sumerian cuneiform tablets, Oannes and the Abkalu of Babylonian story, the ancient flying kings of the Vedas, the mysterious helpers of the Mohawk and Cherokee people of North America and the Yolngu people of Australia's Northern Territory. Dagon of the Philistines, Yahweh, Asherah, and the Elohim of the Bible. All these narrative traditions speak of times when our ancestors were helped, advanced, exploited, or colonized by visitors from other regions of space. Sirius, Orion, and the Pleiades. In 2021, the Pentagon provided the US Senate with a briefing paper concerning the modern phenomenon of UFOs, or UAPs, according to official reports of close encounters experienced by US military, Air Force, and naval units. It reported that US defense activities are interfered with by UAPs, or UFOs, on average, once every 6 weeks. But why are they here? What do they want? On July 26, 2023, the U.S. Congress House Oversight Subcommittee held a hearing in which it heard sworn testimony from three key witnesses under oath, David Fravor, Ryan Graves, and David Grush, concerning the compartmentalization of information within the U.S. military intelligence community regarding ET contact. David Grush had filed a complaint, which the Inspector General of the intelligence community had found to be urgent and credible, questioning the legality by which certain units within the military intelligence community were withholding information about ET contact from other units within the community. Now, he was tasked
and had authority within the Pentagon and congressional authority to survey what information was now available through the program. Now, since 2019, the Pentagon has acknowledged the presence of the program, which is the program to reverse engineer materials retrieved from UFO crashes. So what we're talking about is ET contact and ET technology. David Grush is challenging the legality by which that information is withheld from the public, the Congress, and even from other units within the intelligence community. And if you listen to the questioning of Congressmen Tim Burchett and Andy Ogles, it's easy to see what Congress's concern is. Their concern is that if there is a national security threat, if there is an existential threat hanging over the United States of America, Congress ought to be allowed to know.
Is that why our visitors are here? Is planet Earth being scouted and surveilled? Are we being prepared for invasion?
My books are about paleocontact. That's the theory that our ancestors had contact with other civilizations in the deep past. And my sources are the world's canon of indigenous and ancestral narratives. And I argue that if we go to those sources, the picture that emerges of the contact we're experiencing is a far more layered picture. If you go to the Sumerian stories, for instance, we have the narratives of Enlil and Enki. And that's a story of dark and shade, of different agendas, of some being here for purely strategic reasons because they want control of this region of space, and others here because they're interested in humanity and want a positive relationship with the human race. We have the story in the Babylonian canon of Oannes and the Apkallu, in which you've got a light and a shade. There's an intervention that helps humanity to ascend and progress, but at the same time, all these means of management and control are introduced as well. So it's a far more layered picture. If you go not to the oral canon or the written canon, but to the artistic canon of those same cultures, you will find those same dual layers going on in the images. On the one hand, they are there towering over the human beings and clearly with advanced capabilities, airborne technology, spacefaring technology, advanced weaponry. But on the other hand, they're often portrayed as carrying that little bowl of knowledge, which possibly represents advanced science, medication, and offering the pine cone, which is a symbol of the activation of higher cognitive functions. And so these carvings suggest an intervention that is for the benefit of the human race, that enables us to progress, to become more intelligent, more conscious, more technological. Yet at the same time, the symbology is all there that suggests that these advanced beings, these sky people in the distant past, arrived in what you and I would call an invasion.
There is a light and a shade in many of the world's ancient stories of contact. The Hebrew Bible recalls the arrival of what it calls the Tseva Hashemayim, the sky armies. It speaks of the Kelim Ashito and the Kelim Apaso, advanced weaponry for ethnic cleansing. Similarly, Norse mythology, the Vedic annals of the kings, Sumerian and biblical narratives all speak of violence and warfare among their respective powerful ones. There is a dark side even to the story of our ancient helpers.
In the Babylonian story of Oannes, we have the recollection of the arrival of people who looked bizarre to our Mesopotamian ancestors. They were described as extraordinary monsters, and yet they were honored for having introduced humanity to advanced technology. They taught civil engineering, sanitation, medication. They introduced the human race to all the accoutrements of denser living, city living,
They introduced mathematics, record keeping, money systems, banks, legal systems, all the accoutrements of a sophisticated, specialized civilization. But there's kind of a double layer to that story as well, because on the one hand, this is a phenomenal leap forward for human beings on planet Earth. Yet the introduction of all those things changes a lot to do with our social order. With that denser living comes the privatization of land, and so land rights, which is really the power to live on the land, is extracted from the grassroots and is now managed and controlled. With a money system, you have those who issue the money and those who must now work for money, because they can't support themselves off the land, they have to work for money. And so you have the hierarchy of those who issue the money and those who work for the money. The legal system means you've now got a hierarchy of those who create and police the laws and those who have to keep them. And so there's a stratification of society that comes with that intervention of Oannes and the Apkallu. And you can hear that echoed in the ancient Hawaiian story of the Mo'o, the Ahumanu. In the ancient world of Anatolia and Armenia, stories are told of an advanced being called Haldi. Just as Oannes is associated with authorities in space, or authorities in the heavens, so Haldi, or Haik as he is also known, is associated with another region of space, Orion. Orion is one of three regions of space which keep cropping up in ancestral narratives all around the world, and they are Orion, Sirius, and the Pleiades. Now, the stories that emerge from the Pleiades are universally positive. They are to do with helpful interventions. They are angelic stories. They are helpers. They're beautiful people. Stories from Sirius, also helpful. Stories from Orion, also helpful, but a little more layered. Haldi from Orion is associated with advancement and ascension. He carries a bowl of higher science and medication. He's offering the pine cone of ascension and higher cognitive powers, but he's always associated with weaponry. And his very name, Haldi, means taken or conquered. I think if a being is remembered by the name the Conqueror, we can safely say his arrival was an invasion. Ethiopia is home to the world's longest continuous unchanged canon of the books of the Bible. It contains the Book of Enoch. The Book of Enoch can be found swiftly summarized in Genesis 6 and is quoted from in the New Testament Book of Jude. Both the Old Testament and New Testament writers assume the reader is familiar with the Book of Enoch. It repeats the ancient Sumerian story of observers from the stars breaking ranks for some shore leave and creating hybrid children with human females. The British Empire, in its days of colonization, would talk about the problem of officers of the empire getting too close to the natives. And from time to time, an officer of the British Empire would get too close to the locals, would fall in love with the local culture, would fall in love with a local woman, would get married and have a family. That person was said to have gone native. And it was really seen as a rather offensive breach of the proper order of things, in which the British were there to maintain control, not to fraternize with the locals. And that sense of taboo is exactly what's there in the Book of Enoch. The observers are there to observe, not to fraternize, and it creates this appalling stink among the powerful ones, the overseers, that this fraternization has occurred. They should not be having families with the locals. Now, the question here is exactly what these observers were. How is it possible that people could come from outer space and start hybridizing with human beings? Well, this takes us back to the theory of panspermia, and that is that all life in the cosmos is essentially related.
that the genetic coding which produces biological, intelligent, conscious life is part of the property of the cosmos, just as much as the properties of gravity and the properties of light. And this was a theory championed by Francis Crick, the co-discoverer of the double helix of DNA. He argued that the timelines for planet Earth were simply not long enough for the forms of life with which we're familiar to have developed here. There has to be a longer timeline to life in the cosmos. So in that sense, anyone who visits us is part of a wider cosmic family. Now that's interesting because in 2009, when the Roman Catholic Church held its colloquium about the theological implications of contact with other civilizations, the spokespeople for the Pope, Benedict XVI of the day, were very careful to use the language of wider cosmic family, of brother or sister aliens. And so the hint is there that the company that we're keeping, that we've not been told about, is company rather more similar to ourselves than we might expect. It's the same genetic coding, after all, throughout the cosmos, which, whenever it lands in an hospitable environment, will generate forms of life similar to the ones with which we are familiar. So if we start applying the modern language of DNA manipulation and gene splicing, then perhaps it's not so hard for us to imagine visitors coming for precisely that reason. Stories of hybridization are a testimony which extends all around the world. But the Book of Enoch's story goes beyond hybridization to a pattern of rich cultural exchange. When the Book of Enoch talks about this forbidden fraternization that went on, it wasn't just shore leave, there was a cultural exchange. And so human beings were introduced to more advanced foods, to fashion, to makeup, to adornments. It wasn't just the bare bones accoutrements of civilization, it was the accoutrements of culture that were being introduced to the human race. And it sounds like a more enjoyable experience that suddenly the human beings were having, as well as their visitors. The conflict was between those visitors who were getting closer to human beings and those who were saying, no, the rule is no contact, we're here for strategic advantage only. And that conflict is played out in ancestral narratives all around the world, whether you're reading Norse story, Greek, Celtic, African, Mesoamerican, Mesopotamian, or Biblical. But what is the nature of our contact today? Is human hybridization a part of the phenomenon in the present? When departments of defense around the world talk about human interface, hybridization is what they're talking about. When the US Department of Defense tasked John Mack to assess the credibility of abduction reports filed by officers of US Defense, it was hybridization narratives that dominated. And in my own book, Echoes of Eden, I detail cases of human abduction and hybridization from the deep past, but also from the present, which I show are highly credible. For ancient stories, you could go to Kenya, listen to the Luo people who tell the story of Nyamgodhu Wad Umbari, a story of hybridization between a human male and a female who comes from an underwater base. And that element is there in stories all around the world. You can hear it in Wales in the story of Tylwyth Tig. You can go to the Philippines and hear about the Duende in the Encantos. Go to the Caribbean, hear about Yamoya. Go to Ghana, West Africa, hear about the Mamiwata. The elements are all there. There is a covert presence here on planet Earth. They live in underwater bases, and their interest in the human race is hybridization. And they will abduct people from time to time for a period and then return them. And often they're actually healthier when they come back than they went away. Other than the problem of what to do with their story, do they tell people? because this is not the kind of testimony that's going to make your family love you any better or help you get a better job or be taken more seriously by society at large. It is a problem. You are more likely to be medicated or confined if you share that story. And yet it is a part of ancestral narratives that goes back hundreds and maybe thousands of years. One of the intriguing notes of those stories is the aspect of underwater bases. And so I pricked up my ears when I realized that in that hearing on the 26th, we are now pursuing a public conversation about all-domain anomaly, about transmedium anomaly. And what that means is visitors with advanced capabilities in space, in the air, and under the water. It is an acknowledgement of anomalies under the water. And if you go back to footage that was captured in 2004, that was authenticated by the Pentagon in 2019, that's what you're looking at. Craft that appear to be headed underwater to some kind of underwater base. The Book of Enoch paints a picture of cultural enrichment through contact with these covert others. The Hebrew figure of Asherah, the Zulu figure of Mbabwanawarisa, and the Sumerian figure of Shamhat in the Epic of Gilgamesh all sound this note. In the 21st century, the Pentagon's language of the program suggests that we might be being enriched with new technological advances derived from ET materials. But are we enriching them? Let me give you an ancient scenario and a modern scenario. The ancient and continuous testimony about abduction for hybridization, the way those stories are told by our ancestors, we are being taken because our visitors find human beings very attractive. There is something very special about Homo sapiens sapiens. And to express it in modern terms, there's something in our DNA that our visitors want in their gene pool. Now, that might be our animal strength, our mammal emotion, our unique ability for creativity, compassion, imagination, enjoyment. These may be all aspects they want in their own gene pool, or it could be they are looking to establish a longer-term presence with us on planet Earth and need their descendants to have less difficulty on planet Earth than they're having. It could be something like that. But in that sense, what we have is enriching their gene pool. For a contemporary answer, I would go to the testimony of Brigadier General Haim Eshed. He was the man who for 28 years was Israel's chief of space security. So it was his job to know if we were in contact. And in Christmas 2020, he made a public announcement saying, yes, we are in contact. It was his job to know if there is an existential threat hanging over us. And that was not his language at all. He spoke about contact and collaboration that had been going on for more than 7 decades. And beyond our collaboration is an agreement made at the level of covert government that our visitors can continue their programs of research on planet Earth and elsewhere in our solar system. Now, what kind of research might that be? How are we enriching their research? Is it simply the research of observing? This is going back to the Enoch story of the Igigi. They were observers. Is that what they're doing? In the same way that we observe and label ducks and put little labels on them and check them out a year later to see where they've been, how they've been feeding, so on and so forth. Are we being observed in that way? Or are our visitors here for other reasons? Ancient stories talk about visitors coming for the minerals that the planet had to offer. Other stories for the energetic resources of the planet. And Haim Eshed didn't go quite into that level of detail in his announcement in Christmas 2020, but the sense is there that there is a benefit to our visitors derived from their presence here. And what's in the deal for us is access to materials which we can then reverse engineer. And what Haim Ashed says the goal is that we should reach the point where we know how to produce materials that have an impact on space-time. The policy of non-disclosure will change once we reach that technological bar. Now, that's very interesting, because what Haim Ashed is saying is that the secrecy around the program is really at two levels. That our ET visitors are saying, all right, we won't disclose to the human race as a whole until humanity has attained the ability to manipulate space-time, because at that point, they become a spacefaring civilization too. They have a seat at the table of spacefaring civilizations rather than they're simply discussed at that table. And in the meantime, we are a covert presence. But that also means that the ball is in the court of our governments, the covert layers involved with the program. Because not only do they have to reverse engineer, they have to decide to announce. We now understand what space is and what spaceships are, which was Haim Ashed's phrase. Once that happens, everything changes and our relationship with our cosmic neighbors shifts. And the potential from that is enormous, because if we truly have access to that kind of technology, the ability to manipulate space-time, that implies some other things as well to do with zero-point energy, and all the economics of our planet would shift. Are we ready for that? I happen to think at the grassroots we really are, but that is the shift that we're waiting for. The idea of reverse engineering ET technology has been there for a long, long time. You can find it in the carvings of the Jaguar dynasty from Mesoamerica, with their portrayals of kings and queens wearing facsimiles of technology. You can find it in the biblical narratives of the Urim and Thummim and Ark of the Covenant, facsimiles of technology which the writers and those they wrote about knew how to represent or recreate in symbolic form, but didn't know how to make work. We are now at a place where minds like Jacques Vallée, Nobel Prize nominee Gary Nolan, and Eric W. Davis are working on materials whose properties have an impact on space-time. So that is what is in the public domain. But how far forward are we behind closed doors? What's been acknowledged by the Pentagon is that the unit for doing that reverse engineering work has been in place for more than 70 years. Brigadier General Haim Ashed gave exactly that same time frame, more than seven decades of covert contact, he said. Now, that time frame takes us back into the administrations of Presidents Truman and Eisenhower. And it validates what has been urban legend for a long, long time, that those administrations were aware of contact and were in covert conversations with our visitors. If what the Pentagon is saying today is true, and if what Haim Ashed is saying is true, that the contact and collaboration is more than seven decades old, those urban legends are validated. That time frame would also indicate that it's a very stable arrangement and not one that we should be panicking about with the language of national security or existential threats. But is the stable arrangement one of ET oversight or control? If we are in collaboration with visitors whose technology puts our own in the shade, what is the true dynamic of that relationship? Is Haim Ashed's language of collaboration really a polite word for annexation? In other words, have we already been invaded? When I listen to the ancient Hawaiian story of the Mo'o, the Ahumanu, and the Anunu, it suggests that if there is an invasion, which happens at a covert level, there will be signs that something has changed. and the signs will be variously positive and negative. The negative signs will have to do with heightened social control, a battle for money, the centralization of power and the diminution of power of visible leaders, the centralization of access to resources, land, real estate, food, and the atomization of society at the grassroots level, a polarization of people, setting people in competition with one another. These are all the signs they would say to look for. Now, you might say it does not take aliens to do that to human society. All you need is hierarchy for all those dynamics to occur. And that's entirely true. But what the ancestral narratives are saying is if there's a covert takeover, if there is a covert invasion, those are the kinds of signs you should look for. The positive sign that you've been invaded by an advanced civilization is a rapid acceleration of technology. And I would suggest in the last 70 years, we certainly have seen that. Whether we've seen an increase in social control, battle for control of money, centralization of power, centralization of resources, well, that's a more interesting topic to explore. But our ancestors had a theory as to who the elite of the elite were that would make society shift in those kind of directions. According to Brigadier General Hema Shed, our visitors from elsewhere in the galaxy have agreed to keep their presence covert and their identity secret until such a time as humanity has a proper understanding of what space is and what spaceships are. What Hema Shed is saying is that there is a technological bar that when we reach it, our relationship with our observers will change. Now, that's kind of logical, that as soon as we become a spacefaring civilization, we can take our place at the table of spacefaring civilizations. And that was always the language of Ed Mitchell, the sixth man to walk on the moon. Now, he was obviously bound by layers of non-disclosure agreements, official secrets laws, and yet he campaigned tirelessly for the US government to come clean as to what it knew about ET contact and to come clean about what technology we already have access to. He believed we are on the cusp of becoming a space-faring civilization. Now, when we listen to Hem Ashed, he identifies this same bar, that when we're able to manipulate space-time, is the implication of what he's saying, that is when everything will change for human beings. Our relationship with our planet and with the cosmos and with our neighbors will change in that moment. And we've heard publicly from Jacques Vallée, Eric Davis, Gary Nolan, regarding the materials that they are examining, which would appear through unique isotopes engineered off-planet, outside of the atmosphere, which have an impact on space-time. Now, that is what we are being told publicly. That's in the public domain. So if that's where we are in the public domain, you have to ask, behind closed doors, how much further forward are we than that? I think this is a time for us to be throwing all our encouragement and all our scrutiny on the companies who are doing the reverse engineering, because this leap forward will be a leap forward for all of us. Everything will change in that moment. And so courageous journalists like Ross Coulthard, I'd love to see them sit down with the executives of Boeing and Northrop Grumman and Raytheon and Lockheed Martin and Skunk Works and asking the questions. Now, I dare say they might not be able to say much because they will be bound by official secrets laws. They will have signed layers of NDAs as well. But I think these are the questions we should be asking, because it is those kind of companies in the aerospace world who will make this great leap forward. And it needs to be public. We need to have this understanding in order for the dynamics of our relationship to change with our visitors. And I think we are ready for that. I think at a grassroots level, we are ready for a new kind of economy. I think we've had enough of the battle for money. We've had enough of social control. We've had enough of the centralization of power and the centralization of resources. I think we would love to see a more empowered human race. I think we would love to have the experiences depicted in ancient art, that little bowl or handbag of advanced science and medication, that pine cone of the activation of higher intelligence. We're ready for another great leap forward. But for that to happen, this technological bar has to be arrived at, and it has to be arrived at publicly. That is the meaning of the statement of Haim Ashed, made just before Christmas 2020. And that, I believe, is the true importance of the conversations happening right now in Washington about the impasse of information between the Pentagon and Congress. I think we're ready to go from being the species that's discussed at the table of spacefaring civilizations to being seated at that table. And I have an old-fashioned belief in democracy, that it's better for us to know who represents us at that table, what decisions are being made, who's making those decisions, and in whose interest. The more light we can throw on the reality of contact today, I think the better for everyone. The narratives of world mythology, indigenous peoples, and ancestral stories all suggest that our ancestors wanted us to have a better human experience than they did. Absent of the social control, the battle over money, the theft of land and resources, the theft of visible power, and the polarization of ordinary people, which had afflicted them in their own generations. If we are on the cusp of another upgrade, I say bring it on. I think when our ancestors spoke about the activation of higher cognitive abilities, it wasn't just so that we could wander around enjoying having superpowers. It was so that we could have a more intelligent relationship with each other, with our planet, with our cosmic neighbors. I think we're ready for that. And if there's a technological bar we have to meet before we can go to the next level, then let us throw all our encouragement. Let's not resent the black budgets that have enabled it. That's not really the issue. That's only money. But let us get there together, and let us reach the point where the conversation changes. If we're on the cusp of a different relationship with the cosmos, then let us come together over it. Let us help each other over it. And let us change the conversation for a better human experience. Thank you for watching The Fifth Kind TV. Remember to subscribe and click on the bell for notifications so that you never miss when we upload new content. If you enjoy our content here on Fifth Kind TV and would like to support our work, please would you consider subscribing to our new website, fifthkind.tv. Here we will have our full catalogue of material, along with exclusive access to interviews and documentary content. Sign up today, become part of the community, become part of the conversation. Thank you so much for your support, and I'll see you there.